3, 2. I'm Tim Capper. I have no color black in my home uniforms, and this is AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look into everything arena football. Joining me this week, week two of the 2011 season, is one of our longtime Arena Fan alums, Adam Markowitz. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tim. 5 years and counting at this point.
Wow. And I'm actually freaking out. I went back and I'm like, I actually started this back in 2000. I actually started doing the podcast in its original form back in 2000.
You've been around a little bit longer than I have, at least on Arena Fan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, I can't believe that. I'm getting up near Larry King, just not as popular and don't get paid as much. We had some, before we start, there was some interesting news that came across the wire. Everybody, I'm sure, knows that Troy Bergeron has made the jump from the NFL to the Arena Football League. He's going to be starting, supposedly, with the Cleveland Gladiators. There is also, that just came across the wire, it was Rod Windsor. Last year's 2010, obviously it's last year, AFL... offensive, I think when he was offensive player of the year or rookie of the year, or he was rookie in the AF too, but rookie of the year, offensive player of the year, is back with the Arizona Rattlers. It just makes the Arizona Rattlers, I think, that just more, it's just a lot more stronger than what they currently are.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that when you bring a guy like that into, you know, in your lineup, things are going to change. Of course, I'm still not, not exactly so sure where he's really going to fit in with this. I mean, obviously, he's going to be in the starting lineup. He's going to be out there every offensive snap that he's healthy. But what are you doing with Trandon Harvey? What are you doing with Jason Gathers? What are you doing with Nate Force? There are a lot of teams out there that would love to have guys like that. And you know, you're only taking a really good wide receiver crop and you're making it even better, but I'm not so sure, you know, that it's really going to make that much of a difference from putting Windsor in the lineup as opposed to having either Gathers or Force or whichever one they're going to take out of there on a regular basis.
Yeah, sure. I think one thing that people need to remember, too, is that because Windsor was with the Rattlers last year, he already knows the system that's currently in play. So it's, I mean, yes, the Arena Football League, how hard can it be finding out what are the go routes, you know, if you're going to be the Z, the Z receiver or the X receiver or whatever terminology that they use for the receivers themselves. He knows it already, but you are actually right. Depending on who they sit, they could still make some noise in the Western Division, but as you had mentioned before, you were looking at three particular teams, and Arizona being one of them. But this, I think, that just shows that this did, with one, an addition of one person, in just name and name alone, makes the Western Division that more stronger compared to the other divisions in the AFL.
Yeah, I mean, as if the Western Division already wasn't, I pretty much without an argument. I mean, as long as everyone stays healthy, if that's the best division in this game. It'd be strange to think that Arizona could win 13 games and finish third in that division, but it's very entirely possible at this point.
Yeah, it's true. You look at the other Western Division teams from this past week. We had the return of the San Jose SaberCats. They took on the defending champion. We can't say two-time defending champion because they did win the last Arena Cup and did win last year's Arena Bowl. They basically got their ass handed to them. I think at one point the score was, I think, 41-14. Didn't bode so well for Spokane's starting quarterback, Rowley.
At least for one game for Spokane, in a situation like that, I'm not exactly jumping ship at this point. It's still a really good team, at least on paper, based on what we saw last year. Yeah, you never like to see a quarterback get picked off three times in a game like Rowley did, but, you know, he had a couple games like that last year. Some they lived to tell about, some they didn't live to tell about. You know, when push came to shove and the big money was on the line, Spokane was a team that was able to figure it out. And I mean, Rowley did only throw 11 picks last year, So that's always, that's always an encouraging number for a quarterback that stays upright for 16 weeks. But, you know, the bottom line with San Jose is they're back, and the Sabercats are really, really good. Mark Reed went 21 of 25, I think it was, and he looked very sharp, like he hadn't missed. You know, this is a guy who looks like he's been out for 2 weeks, not for 2 years.
Exactly, and this is a Spokane team that really did lose one of their offensive weapons from last year, with Huey Whitaker heading over to Tampa. And as we've seen, 1 week really doesn't make a season, but Huey, maybe because of the quarterback situation in Tampa Bay, where he seemed to be not really utilized that much, but Raul Villa has come back in fine form. Only one touchdown for him, and he did get over 100 yards, but it just seems that, their wide receiver core is intact, and they shouldn't have any problems. But, it just depends on how these teams are going to do once they come into Spokane, because we know that Spokane fans are probably, they're up there when it comes to the stalwarts, the long-standing teams, and the fans have been around for quite a long time. It just depends on how they're going to play in Spokane. But, Western Division, I really could, of all the divisions themselves, Adam, I don't think you can call this that division a bus league anymore, a bus division. These teams have a lot of traveling to do.
Yeah, they definitely do. I mean, there's not... It's really hard when these teams have to come east, but it's just as hard when these teams have to go, when the East Coast teams have to come out to the west. Look at what happened last year. I mean, Milwaukee had to go all the way out there for the playoffs, and obviously Tampa Bay had to go out there for the Arena Bowl, and you saw what happened in that game. It's so pivotal for those teams out west to get, put up the best record possible, not just so they can host in their own conference, but if when push comes to shove, whichever one of them gets into the Arena Bowl, assuming that it's, I guess I shouldn't immediately say it's going to be one of the teams in the West, but assuming that it is, it's that much more important for them to have the home field advantage in that game, because, having taken the trip from Orlando to Spokane last year myself, I wasn't playing, and I was absolutely beat. I was there for 4 days, and my body never really had adjusted to the time difference.
Well, the same thing. You look at when Vegas had the game itself, time difference there. But it's obviously we can't just center on the Western Division itself. Mm-hmm. There are other teams in the AFL. You come across to the game, the inaugural game this year on the NFL Network. You look at Pittsburgh and you look at Philadelphia. It seemed that Philadelphia has just basically started off from where they were in their, do we dare say, asterisk season, their asterisk championship season, when they, back in 2000 and, when the hell did they win it?
2008.
Thank you, 2008. They basically, decimated Tulsa by picking off not only the starting quarterback, but one of the best wide receivers, at least recently, in the AFL, in Donovan Morgan. Those two did seem to have no rust whatsoever. Sort of like a tandem between, say, Mike Perez and an Eddie Brown in Albany. Hopefully that Philadelphia will not be a one-receiver team, but I think Pittsburgh was able to stick with the team, considering that they are a true expansion team. But, if you think about it, Philadelphia could really be considered a true expansion team also this year.
Well, Philadelphia was just able to... Philadelphia started with this mindset that Ron Jaworski claims that he kind of came up with, that you don't just need one good quarterback, you need two good quarterbacks. Just in case anything happens, Justin Allgood. Was Ryan Vannell the greatest thing in the world last year? No, he wasn't. But is he a hell of a lot better than a lot of these other backup quarterbacks who maybe have never touched the field before? I think there's a clear difference between even some of the starting quarterbacks that we saw last week and maybe some of them we're going to see in week two. In comparison to what we know Vena can do. We know he can run. We know he's got a decent arm. Yeah, we know he's going to make the mistakes, but we know he can bring a team to victories, which is something that we don't know about guys like Dan Radabaugh, J.J. Radring, Bobby Reed, et cetera, et cetera.
It's true. And I just think the one bad thing for in particular to the Pittsburgh game itself, even though I felt that the broadcast itself was actually spectacular, probably one of the most memorable games that I have seen on broadcast. I guess the cable, broadcast TV, since they've been on television. But I think that Pittsburgh had the chance to win. Everybody who may have seen the game, everybody saw the nuances of what occurred. But Pittsburgh, I think, they really had the game, had a chance to win the game, especially if they had all the momentum, kicking that last-second field goal to tie it at the buzzer in regulation. But he was not a starter. He only started one game last year for Jacksonville. Mark Bernard. Right?
Brian Morris.
Brian Morris, yes.
Bernard Morris, there you go.
Yeah, backwards. But, for a guy starting his first game, I think he did quite well.
Well, first game
of the season, obviously. I mean, I said he had one to start before, but being the actual, name the actual starter for a team. Sorry.
You're talking about a guy who still threw three picks, who started 11 for 11, who only ended up going, bear with me, I'll pull up the stats here, I think it was like 23 of... let's see here. It was 24 of 37. So he ends the game going, basically completing 50% of his passes after he starts 11 for 11. And I think he only had one touchdown after that, and he threw three picks, including, I understand the ones that Tanner Varner had were absolutely amazing, but
absolutely
spectacular. Yeah, one he threw to Mike. Yeah, I mean the one he threw to Mike Brown. I mean, I'm 5'6" and don't have an athletic bone in my body. I might have been able to pick that one off and bring it into the end zone.
Yeah, and a lot of the I don't know. They are expansion team, but I said from the game itself. I know you had a couple of issues also with the way that Coach Ho was actually was managing his team, especially near the end of the second half.
Well, I'm convinced that myself and a few of my cohorts and the other longtime fans in this league understand how this game works. Not to say that Coach Ho doesn't, but sometimes coaches don't seem like they understand really the nuances of how to kill a clock from ahead. We saw Arizona kill off the last, 20 seconds or whatever it was against Jacksonville this week by, dropping back and just throwing the ball into the stands a couple times.
Which should be.
Which it's exactly what you should do. But even when you've got... 30-some-odd seconds to kill. I had no problem with trying to run the ball on first down because if you can run the ball forward three times, the game was over. Pittsburgh only had two timeouts. You have three downs to do it in. If you push forward three times and when you have a 400-pound quarterback, you should be able to do that. when you have the Pillsbury Doughboy, on steroids, playing quarterback, you should be able to do that. But after they failed on first down, the clock stopped. At some point, you have to realize that getting this team to burn its timeouts isn't going to change anything. At some point, you're going to have to get in the end zone to win this game. And Coach Ho elects, instead of trying to, play some offense, to go, to just run the ball a couple more times. And then he trots out the field goal kicker, in which I don't know, he didn't trot out the field goal kicker. He went for it, he just ran the ball again.
Sure.
And I don't know whether he forgot what down it was or whether he really thought he was going to score on the ground or whatever the case was, but you got to try to score that touchdown. I mean, throwing up two scores with 20-some-odd seconds left, you're not guaranteed to win, but you're probably going to win. Going up even four or obviously as, I'm sorry, six, or giving back the ball as, Philly did, you can't do that. You just can't. Philly played too well in the second half of that game to be put in that situation.
There's also, I think, a very big turning point. I don't see how Coach Ho can actually channel his inner Clint Dozell and forget exactly how many downs there are. I think Clint had a little bit more hits to the head than Coach Ho has. But I think there's one particular play that showed. That was helping Pittsburgh stuff was the line drive kick off after the safety that gave Philadelphia a 3-point lead. The kick that went directly off one of the linemen. I mean, you can say that the coach O didn't. I will admit, you should be able to run the ball at least once. In arena football, because you have to get positive yards, which I think is one of the best rules in pro football, I think it easily should be adopted for the CFL and for the NFL, because I really hate to kneel down. You know, you get a first down with 2 minutes left in the NFL, you kneel down once, nobody don't have any other timeouts, you basically have won the game. That's just the way that it is. But I think that would probably was one of the plays. I think for Edinger, for Pittsburgh, being able to kick that thing, I think it shows that this Pittsburgh is not going to lie down. They can't be taken lightly. So it's, but I mean, you have other teams out there too that really did not show that much promise. I mean, poor Tampa Bay loses their quarterback, and I think their backup did not. He did not throw a single offensive touchdown during the game. Luckily, B.J. Hall has been activated, I think, and he is going to be starting for the Storm this week, if I remember correctly.
Don't think so. I think Grant Gregory is the one that's starting this week, but it's not. I know all three are suiting, so it's going to be an interesting roster tonight. For those that don't know, we're actually taping this just before that Utah-Tampa Bay game gets started tonight. I don't know what Tampa Bay is going to really be doing with this quarterback position for the rest of the year, but having now... I did not actually get a chance to see the game against New Orleans, but having read enough about that and seeing no touchdown passes and having seen these guys, try to throw the ball against half of an Orlando defense in a scrimmage, albeit a scrimmage, it's pretty clear that, if I'm Dave Ewart, I might be, trying to call up Fred McNair and seeing if he wants to come back, from the old Florida Bobcats, see if he wants to try taking some snaps here for the Storm. But we'll see if B.J. Hall can make a difference. We'll see if Grant Gregory can make a difference. I don't really particularly think so. But they're not the worst quarterbacks in the league. I can definitely tell you that.
No, they are not. I mean, we've seen. I think some off the top of my head here.
Eric Ward was absolutely awful for Milwaukee. Milwaukee doesn't have any quarterbacks whatsoever. We still really don't know what Iowa's going to bring to the table with Brad Banks. We don't know if John Dutton's going to be okay in Cleveland. We don't really know, what Tommy Grady's going to be able to do in Utah. So we've still got a lot of, a lot of question marks out there. I'm not really sold on Bobby Reed. I'm not really sold. Like I said, on anybody in Milwaukee's got, I'm not sold on J.J. Raderink yet. I'm not really totally sold on Brett Elliott yet. So there's a lot of candidates out there. There's clearly a tier class in quarterbacks in this league, and all those guys that I just listed are way below names like Rowley and Grebe and Davila and all those other guys who really put up those just fantastic seasons, at least statistically, and for the most part in the win columns for their teams as well last year.
It really hurts Milwaukee too to lose to lose their franchise player who decided to go ahead and stay in the UFL or wherever the hell he's going to go next. Right now, nobody seems to be going to the NFL. Everybody seems to be coming back from the NFL. I mean, at least two players at least that had some ties to the AFL itself. But you're right. I mean, with week two coming upon us, some of these teams we had not seen play yet. I think a lot more we'll be able to see a lot more what could be occurring within the QB situation within the league itself, since we'll finally get to see some of these other teams play. It's not that big of a deal. I know you yourself, you're not really that big of a uniform guy, and as I jokingly alluded to at the beginning in our intro, I just really think that the league has lost its way when it comes to uniform colors. I really do. I mean, maybe the league, I don't think the league has any say over what colors that these teams use, or I don't know, do they still have a say over logos? If so, I don't know. Milwaukee, I don't know, but Ironman's just as bad. But I think we have teams that really have black as their primary color because way too many of them. And I think they just need to get, you know what I'm saying? They just really need to get where, I know you joke. I mean, you look at the teams for Pittsburgh, the old Pittsburgh Gladiators. You have green and gold. Detroit Drive, you have the light blue. I mean, can't be as bad as the Zubaz colors in the early 90s. Those are absolutely...
No, nothing was as bad as those things.
You know, absolutely atrocious. But you've had your teams that have been basically black or all black. I think you yourself say, I know how you just love, you know, I'm being sarcastic, you love those red uniforms that the Predators wore a couple
of years. Yeah, those things were real. Those things, you need to bring sunglasses into the game.
Yeah, what about the light? Well, it was interesting, but remember the light blues that the LA Avengers wore?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of those yet.
And then there was the burnt orange, the all burnt orange of the Colorado Crush.
another one you needed sunglasses for to go to the game.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Pittsburgh, the teams like Pittsburgh, Georgia, and Dallas, Milwaukee, at least they have some secondary colors. They have some orange and some white on them. Basically, you know, Georgia being all black, Pittsburgh all black, Dallas all black. You have, Iowa is black, but at least they have some other color within them. Another thing that kills me, too, is Arizona getting rid of that iconic copper helmet. I just do not know what the ownership is thinking in Arizona. You know, that's stalwart going all the way back to the times where colors were abundant in the league, you know. But it's, as I said, I know you're not a uniform guy. Just to me, I just really think that they need to spruce it up a little bit. I mean, maybe they're not getting much of a choice when it comes to their uniform supplier in Russell Athletic. Maybe, you know, obviously we're seeing some of the cookie cutter looks for some of the teams. They basically all look the same. They look a lot like the CFL. You know, all the same cookie cutter uniforms across the league.
Yep.
And then there was the interesting, I thought it was an interesting look until I actually saw a picture of it. Spokane Shock using one of their alternate logos on their arms and on the pants. You know, you see pants like that, it seems a little weird to me because you really don't know what it is. You know, some teams will use, I've seen some teams in some of the other indoor leagues use, the camouflaging and stuff like that. You know, go with some of the older teams that had, the old Iowa Barnstormers had the propeller, Nashville Cats had the arm of the, of a guitar on their pants, or the Fort Worth Cavalry that had the saber on their pants. You know, go back something like that. I mean, Adam, it's just way too much black. It's just way, and I think Orlando is probably, are they going with the all black look again this year? I mean, hell, Orlando went with all, they changed their primary logo to a black peeve. Hopefully it's just a 20th anniversary thing.
Well, we'll see. If there's one team that should be in all black, that's the one. I mean, that's been the all black team forever in this league. There have just been so many bad looks for uniforms. I mean, if you don't like black, go look at the Chicago Rush helmets and then tell me you don't beg for black again.
Oh, God. Dark blue. Whatever the color was. That's true. For those of you who don't know, Chicago is celebrating their 10th anniversary this year. And for some strange reason, they've gone ahead and changed their... it was considered not really an iconic blue and their rushing R logo. They changed into silver this year. I don't get it. I really, really don't get it. I mean, I've heard comments saying that they look like astronauts in their uniforms. I think they have silver pants too, if I'm not mistaken. But something just needs to change. I mean, Chicago is also going to be celebrating their history by using by dressing as the Chicago Bruisers for a couple of games this year, which that I don't totally understand, considering that the Chicago Rush and the Chicago Bruisers have no connection whatsoever. I don't get that.
Well, I don't know. It's a neat little tribute. You're only going to see it for 1 year. It doesn't really disturb me, and it might bring back some nostalgia for some of these, some of these fans who might happen to remember back in the day when the Bruisers were there.
Yeah, that's true. But it's either way. Come on. If anything, please, to you guys in the Arena Football League head office, if you have an option, do not let your teams go with an all-black or something. Just bring back some colors. Colors of the rainbow to the AFL. Bring something back. I mean, you got greens of San Jose. Gorgeous color. Gorgeous green. You got the very unique colors of the Spokane Shock, etc. So it's... please. Is black this year, is black the new black? That doesn't make any sense. I really don't know. I think we can actually say, and if for anybody who had read our stat guru, Andy Lupischnack's column this week, it's actually very happy to announce that the stat program is the way that it should be. No more that, I think it was Dokatronic, or whatever the hell it was called that they were using.
Jack Stats.
Or Jack Stats, a company that makes scoreboards, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I know they don't make stat software that's worth anything.
Yeah. Finally, and I think if I'm not mistaken, you have access to the back end. Is that right, of the stats? Are you able to see
that? Well, I don't know whether it's the same thing that's... I don't know whether it's gone, you know, quote, mainstream or not, or whether I just have the back end of it. But I know at least the, they tried these stats out at the Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Orlando scrimmage. There were some kinks to it. It looks like they've been worked out. You know, the only game where there were real issues with this past week in week one was the Tulsa Georgia game, where it's a Carlos Martinez was throwing for like negative 40 yards, but eventually they got that worked out, and eventually they've got the program, back in shape, and it finally looks like we may actually have legitimate, media-worthy type of statistics this year yet.
Agreed.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, I know. And also, with the new, the return of the stats, it also complements the quite good-looking live stats program. I mean, what the league has had for the past couple of years, I think, really had a lot to be desired. But it seems like the new stats program that they were using starting last week is a huge improvement over what it used to be.
Well, yeah, well, it couldn't get any worse. I mean,
We're not the NFL, but we're not the CFL. You know, hockey is able to have their own gorgeous program. Same thing with basketball, but I think they all use the same... I think they all use the same program, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not so sure.
No?
No, I don't know. I'm really not sure. But, yeah, this program looks very professional. It's a 50-yard field that there's actually... They actually show where each play is going. Penalties turn up in red. Positive plays turn up, I think it's in blue or green or something. I guess it's blue. It's a good looking. It's got a scoreboard down in distance. Yeah, there are some crazy tabs all over the place where you can get stats, but you can pull up all of the stats at one time whenever you want, which is really the only reason I know Brian Morris completed his first 11 passes before he went absolutely bonkers in the wrong direction for Pittsburgh last week.
Exactly. Speaking of more stats, there are just one quick glance at this thing of what happened last week. I'm curious, do you think, now obviously Bobby Reed is a quarterback, but you also have Derek Ross. I think he was channeling his inner Dan Alexander. 66 yards, 4 touchdowns. What do you think about Bobby Reed for Tulsa? I mean, he almost had 100 yards. I think the first quarterback. I think it's probably the second quarterback that we can actually say that ran for more than 90 yards, along with Michael Bishop. I mean, what do you think?
Well, the comment that I made in my article this week was that Bobby Reed is Adrian McPherson with an arm or Michael Bishop with a brain. But either way, I'm not so sure that Adrian McPherson with an arm or Michael Bishop with a brain would really be able to produce wins in this league. It's not a running league. It's not a league where you're expected to be able to get out of the pocket and move and throw the ball and you just need to drop back, take 5 steps, take 3 steps, take 7 steps, take whatever it is, and throw the ball and put it in an accurate spot. There's no doubt that Bobby Reed's one of the most athletic players immediately in this league at the quarterback position, but is he really capable of winning games? I don't know. He puts up these nice stats. He runs for 90-some-odd yards. He runs for 4 touchdowns. He throws for, was it 3 or 4 more touchdowns as it was. But the team still got beat, and they still, even though I know it was only a 6-point game, still got beat pretty soundly. Putting up 47 points isn't going to cut it in this league. Maybe it would have when Michael Bishop was quarterbacking back in the day, but it doesn't now. And that's, I understand Bobby Reed doesn't have a lot of help around him. If you put him on San Jose, maybe this is a different discussion. But right now with what he's got, I don't think it's going to work. It never has worked. The only mobile quarterback that has ever stood the test of time for any period of time in this league and won a championship is Connell Maynor.
Yep.
Unless maybe there's someone from way back in the day that I don't remember. But, you know, your guys like Shredrick Bonner and Jay Gruden and Mike Brown and all, or not Mike Brown, Mike Perez and all these guys, these guys were drop back quarterbacks.
They pocket passers, exactly.
Yeah, they took three steps, they threw the ball, and they put the ball right where it was supposed to be, and that's how you win games.
Actually, we could actually throw Kurt Warner into that, too. I think that's how he had his early success once he left the Arena League. So it's true. I mean, the AFL is not an alphabet league. We're not any of the other alphabet leagues where it's more geared towards the NFL's type of game. It's true. But it's very interesting to see a quarterback almost run for 100 yards again. It hasn't happened all that often in the AFL, but you have to be able to put it together. Maybe run, keep the running to the fullbacks. And the short yardage touchdowns, I should say. What do you think?
It's a passers league. So you're going to have to throw the ball eventually. You're not going to be able to run around and take these hits like that as a quarterback and live to tell about it. It's such a small field.
Yeah, it's funny, too. You talk about not being a running league, and you are correct. Look what happened to Ryan Vanna. We were talking about it before. Four runs, got nowhere, basically.
Yeah.
So, before we get to our last topic of the week, we're going to quickly go over what we have on this week's schedule. Starting with the Thursday, March 17th day game, it's going to be Happy St. Patrick's Day for everybody around, especially in Utah. Tampa Bay.
And isn't that where you want to celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, I tell you, there's nothing like going to a Mormon city where you can't have a drink. Happy St. Paddy's Day. Where's the near beer? I need a near beer. I don't even know if they sell near beer. Maybe it's too close to being beer. Tampa Bay travels to Utah. It'll be the first, I think we say it's the first test to see how well Tommy Grady does for the Utah Blaze. Will him and Aaron Boone basically click from the get-go? I'm sure this would be a lot better debut for the team than it has been in the last couple of years. The Blaze has just been absolutely just horrible. Hopefully, with the change back to their original arena, the Energy Solutions Arena, they'll have a little bit more of a crowd to back them up.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know with it's going to be an interesting game because you've got a Tampa Bay team that I don't know if we really learned too much about in New Orleans last week, and obviously a Utah team, which it can't be nearly as bad as it was last year. But you know, to see if, you know, new ownership again, new arena, a lot of new bodies. I mean, their turnover on that team was amazing from last year. Now they have a quarterback. So it's something that they haven't had in quite a while.
It's true. Yeah, very true. Friday's dock includes the Voodoo playing host to the Orlando Predators. Then on the NFL Network, or I don't know if we call it the Philadelphia Soul Network. God, I have really way too many games on the NFL Network this year. But then again, they are the Chicago Rush, I guess, from last year. Speaking of Chicago, Chicago and Philadelphia, Coach Ho's dramatic return to Chicago. I don't know if it's going to mean much at all. It depends on how they play it up. Georgia goes into Jacksonville. Jacksonville quarterback Aaron Garcia is just a mere 33 touchdowns away from being the first ever quarterback in pro football history to throw for 1,000 touchdowns. Kansas City heads to San Jose. Saturday, you have Tulsa going into Dallas. Iowa starting off their year at Pittsburgh. Milwaukee heading into Arizona. And last but not least, Cleveland Gladiators going into Spokane. See how the Spokane can see if they can rebound from their opening week loss and shellacking to the San Jose SaberCats. Now, if you were to choose one of these particular games as being your game of the week, Adam, which one would you say has the most importance to you?
The most important game is probably the game on Friday between Orlando and New Orleans. Just, I mean, it's a divisional game. That there's one team at home in New Orleans, you know, you never want to start off 0-2. You definitely don't want to start off 0-2 at home against two divisional rivals. So if the Voodoo are going to be legit this year, they need to win this game. And for Orlando, you've got Nick Hill, who had a great second half of the season. No Bobby Scipio this week, serving a suspension. It's a shame that he can't be, you know, in New Orleans on St. Patrick's Day weekend to celebrate with the team. But you know, that's probably the most important game, the most intriguing game to me, is probably that last one on the slate on Saturday between Cleveland and Spokane. You know, the Gladiators, John Dutton, you know, the only thing he's good for are a few interceptions. The question is Troy Bergeron going to be able to come in that offense and do the same types of things that he was doing with the Force back in 2006, 2007, 2008?
He also has the task of replacing Ben Nelson as their primary air receiver.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions to this Cleveland team. It was a good team last year. It was a team that had the ability to win some games. I mean, this team went on the road when Orlando was hot and beat the Predators. You know, Gladiators also early in the year, even when they were either 0-3 or 0-4 at the time, they went into Spokane Arena, beat the Shock, and beat the Shock down. I think the final score of that game was like 76-40 something. I don't have it at my fingertips here, but that game was, if I remember right, was not close at all, and John Dutton went absolutely bananas. You know, for Spokane, you start off 0-1, you get absolutely killed by a divisional rival on the road. How good this team really is, I still think it's a championship contender. I'm certainly not writing them off at this point. But this is the type of game you got to win. And, you know, the banners are going to be going up in Spokane. They've already got a ton of them. This one's just going to be sitting up right next to all the other ones in there. I guess it's their south end zone. You know, they've got a big old sign up there mentioning that it's Death Valley out there, and right above it is where they keep all their banners. So they're going to be lifting another one into the rafters. They've got to have all the motivation in the world coming off of that loss to San Jose, and it's the revenge spot for last year. So there's a lot of questions to be answered in this one, and I think if there's such a thing as a meaningful loss, this could be one for Cleveland if it proves that it can go again into Spokane and at least hang around with a team that has all that going for it this week.
Exactly, and obviously I'm sure Rob, Coach Keefe will have them raring to go for that game versus the Gladiators. Lastly this week, it's something we talk about every year, more so I think it's since the AFL's relaunched, but I mean, it's been a topic before, is the actual attendance itself. You know, some of the larger teams, some of the more well-known teams that drew well last year haven't played yet at home, Iowa being one of them. You know, they consistently drew very close to 10,000. Pittsburgh drew very well this week for an opening game, but I guess their big test will be this week versus Iowa at home, see how they do their set game. How many of those close to 14,000 actually show up again? San Jose, probably about the norm. I think probably a couple more thousand, you know, that should show up. I mean, you draw 10,500 for a team that hasn't played in almost, they kept on saying how many days it was, but it was, you know, almost basically 2 years. It's very, very good to see. But then you look at these other teams. I mean, Milwaukee, Georgia, Arizona, 8,400, very decent. My biggest surprise to me was actually New Orleans, but I think you're actually would disagree with me on that.
Well, I'm not. There's only so many times you can take a team away from a city and can put a team in just such bad. You know, how many times are you going to alienate a fan base by either taking away the team, moving the team, doing whatever to the team, or, you know, in the case of I'm not going to blame New Orleans for Katrina, but, you know, after that, when the league folded in 2009, yeah, you know, it's how many times are you going to do this where fans say, okay, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Well, what happens fool me the third, the fourth, the fifth time?
Mm-hmm. Which happens, you know, to be the case for New Orleans. It is technically the third revival of the team.
Well, and I mean, the city of New Orleans has its own, you know, specific sports problems right now. The Hornets can't draw anybody in there. That team's going to have to either be contracted or moved or something. So New Orleans is a city that's not in great shape right now. In general, I don't think the Voodoo are really be sounding like a graveyard pretty soon. You know, the other venues. I mean, Milwaukee probably just needs to go. It doesn't work there right now. It's not going to work in Gwinnett again for the Force. We'll see tonight what happens in Utah, but I wouldn't be surprised if you saw 4,000 or 5,000, put up. It's going to work. At some point we have to kind of sit back and recognize, is it going to really before? Did the AFL really ever work in Dallas or really anywhere in Texas for that matter?
When it was a team that was owned by the Cowboys, or at least the Jones family itself. Other than that, I don't even remember how the old Texans drew. I don't know. San Antonio, I don't think drew that all that well, mind you, considering where they were playing. But God, no.
I mean, Houston couldn't find a home. The Texas Terror were a terrible team for drawing. It never worked. And what the allure is of saying, okay, if it didn't work in the 80s and it didn't work in the 90s and it didn't work early in the 2000s, that who determines that it's going to work in 2010 or 2011? I don't understand. I mean, I understand that last year that you needed to bring Spokane up, and Spokane really is the exception to the rule because that team was probably going to be an AFL team anyway by this point. But you had to bring in.
And it may draw the people itself, but it's, but as you're saying, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, but all these different venues work. Oh, I'm sorry, what I was saying before with the Alabamas and the Bossiers and the Oklahoma Cities and those places that are and Georgia and all these teams that came back for this season that weren't so certain about getting back on the horse and getting back into this new AFL or AF1 or whatever goofy name Commissioner Kurz wants to give it. There's going to be a point we might have to realize that averaging 7,000 fans a game is what we're going to come to expect. We're not going to put 15,000 people in the good stadiums and 20,000 people in for Arena Bowl's playoff games. It's just not going to happen anymore. And at the point the league has to say, okay, maybe this is just what we need to come to expect at this point.
A lot of these teams are not getting very good dates. I mean, could that be one aspect of why they're not drawing? I mean, Dallas has their home opener at 1 o'clock on a Saturday. Milwaukee has their first home game on a Monday, so that really can't bode well for the attendance itself either.
Yes. Now, talk to me when they play a Friday night game. Talk to me when they play a Saturday night game.
Right.
It's going to happen for all these teams. But you're going to see the same thing, sure. Okay, in Milwaukee, you'll end up with 3,800 fans instead of 3,200 fans. You're talking about a team that could barely host a damn playoff game. They couldn't find a venue to put a playoff game at. I mean, if they had the American National Conference title game, American or National Conference, whichever damn conference it is, if they had the conference title game, they might have had to go and play the game on the road. So it's a good thing it's Spokane won in the other game in that league.
In the AFL, we try to find the positives within the league, except there are quite a few, but there always are these negatives, too, that always seem to come up. Hey, actually, there's one positive, too, and after speaking with our president and King Lear and hi, and bow to you, Joe Kaufman, the guy who runs Arena Fan, there is actually a media guy this year. So there's one positive. Woo, it's about time. Yay, there we go. It's going to be very interesting to see. I hope everybody enjoys this week.
Yes, I have seen it. I have laid eyes on it. I have not had one in my possession, but I have seen it. It does exist.
The show in any way. We have our
Twitter. And actually, it looks like some of it's happening.
Twitter.com/ArenaFan. There is our Facebook account at Facebook.com/ArenaFan. There is my email account. At tim.capper@arenafan.com, and there is Adam's account at adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. Any last words, Adam? It's going to be fun to enjoy all the games this week around Arena Fan Nation.
It's going to be an interesting week, and based on when we're recording, it actually starts in 2 minutes, so I'm actually pretty excited about it.
From everybody here at the AFL Tonight Studios, I'm Tim Capper for Adam Markowitz. Watch the rebound off the net.